Chapter 6. Hati shorare jate shia urisol aruikenu hatish. Better one big enemy that you can see than many small ones that you can't. Mandalorian Proverb. Coruscant, Lan Shevu's apartment. Can you trust Captain Girden? Ben asked.
As much as a hut, Shevu said, sitting with his elbows braced on his knees, head resting on his hands.
He stared at the holochart propped against the chair as if he were trying to levitate it.
Heol, bless him, is a career man, and trust has a very different meaning for our colleagues who were recruited from the intelligence services. Let's say it's flexible.
The rift between the former spooks in the Galactic Alliance Guard and people recruited from the police had started opening early, just after 967 Commando was formed. Spies accepted that losing prisoners, as in killing them, was part of the job. CSF-trained personnel didn't. After that, they'd never quite seen eye to eye again.
Try again, Ben said. They had to get access to Jason's Stealth X.
Ben would have difficulty infiltrating the GAG hangars. Not impossible, but not a stroll either. And even Shevu, with all his valid pass cards, would draw attention if he so much as popped the canopy. They needed an hour in a cramped, conspicuous space to do painstaking work. It wasn't like slipping in and attaching an explosive device and sliding out again. In a saner world, they could have applied for a search warrant. Ben knew that would rapidly become a death warrant for Shevu if he tried to do it by the book. But Shevu could be as flexible as Girden in his own way.
Maintenance, Shevu said. Somehow we need an excuse to call it in for servicing.
Don't stealth X's have a 1,000-hour maintenance interval?
Unfortunately. And I don't think INCOM will oblige us with a recall.
Who can we trust on the ground crew?
Shevu sat upright.
It's not a matter of trust. The fewer who know, the shorter the chain. The less we risk being discovered.
Ben had another brief urge to abandon the idea and just go with his gut rather than put Shevu at risk. If only Mom had said one word. Jason. It wouldn't have been perfect proof in a court, but Ben would have had closure. And maybe the end would be the same anyway. And Jason on trial was a pipe dream.
I better call Dad, Ben said. Don't worry, we'll think of something.
Ben suspected that his father would have a good idea of what he was doing, even if he didn't know where he was doing it. He'd break it like he'd planned. Gently. Audio only.
Hi, Dad. How are you doing?
Luke sounded as if he was making an effort to switch into an upbeat voice.
I'm okay. Where are you? I can't trace the link. Coruscant.
I thought as much.
Would it really help to hear me say the same things again, Dad? I'm sorry I never told you.
I could take it, actually, but thanks for trying to protect me.
Dad, I'm pretty sure Jason was implicated.
If Ben used the detached, oblique language of investigation, Luke would know he was in full control of his emotions and not about to do anything dumb. But he didn't say, Mom's murder. He found himself stopping short of that.
I have to prove or disprove that for my own peace of mind. He's worse than you imagine, Dad. He just killed one of his own crew. He broke her neck.
There was a faintly crackling pause, and then Luke said, I know. Admiral Neothel told me.
Neothel?
Shevu looked up at the mention of her name. She's moved from being helpful to us to taking the risk of contacting me direct.
Ben, I've told her to trust Shevu. Where do you think I am?
There you go. You trust him too.
How far do you think she'll stick her neck out?
Pretty far.
As far as Cal Omis and Dirk Gedgen did when they met in secret to discuss removing Jason? And look what I did then. If I hadn't assassinated Gedgen, would we be here now? Is this all my fault for just obeying Jason?
You might hear that I've asked a favor of her then, Dad.
Sooner or later.
Ben struggled again with the thought that was uppermost in his mind, more important even than nailing Jason, that he had seen his mother's force ghost. The first thing he'd wanted to do was tell Luke the news. And then he wondered how his dad would feel when he knew that his wife hadn't appeared to him. Ben now knew exactly how desperate you could be to grab one more minute, one more second even, with someone you'd lost. It was the greatest hunger he'd ever experienced, all-consuming and blind. But he'd got that wish, and Dad hadn't. Would he feel robbed? Would he torment himself, wondering why Mom had chosen Ben? Did I even see what I thought I did? Ben was sure he had. And there would be a better time to tell Dad. Maybe he had seen her too, but wasn't saying so yet, for exactly the same reason.
Just tell me if I'm likely to run into you while you're doing it, Luke said, jerking Ben's attention back to the here and now. And you might hear crazy rumors about Jaina, too.
They'll be true.
How crazy?
She's gone to ask Fett to train her to take on Jason.
Ben didn't find that crazy at all. We all have to think outside the box these days, Dad.
He could have sworn his father started to laugh for the first time in months.
You know, I must have blinked and missed you growing up, and overtaking me.
Ben almost relented and risked telling him about Mom, but the moment was lost. It would come again.
Take care, Dad.
Shevu fidgeted, waiting for Ben to end the link.
What about Neothel? What did he say?
She went to see Dad. She's come out against Jason, at least privately.
That could be a break.
Specifically?
She can authorize things. All I have to do is ask her.
That's dangerous.
So is breaking into the GAG hangars and getting caught swabbing the seat of the Chief of State's personal Stealth X.
We could drop this right now.
No. Because now I have to know, too. And this is a reported crime, right? Forget that murder I mentioned, officer. It doesn't work like that.
I could get you killed.
I could get you killed.
Shevu pulled the holochart onto his lap, balancing it on his knees. Even if Jason's away on one of his jaunts minus the stealth, then someone will have to have a pretty good reason for scrambling all over it, or he'll be on full paranoid alert. I'll find a reason and get Neothel to make it happen. And I'll make sure I'm always wired with a holorecorder when I have contact with dear Jason, even if it's only audio. You can never be too careful.
Shevu was casting around for any evidence he could grab. Every loose thread Ben followed, every connection he made, seemed as fragile and flimsy as a hair. It was all if. They might risk their lives getting into the Stealth X and find nothing. Ben saw Mara Skywalker again, tugging strands from her scalp and dropping them into his palm that would have waited forever to catch them. Perhaps they were still falling somewhere.
He hoped that whatever unknown forces determined the existence of ghosts would allow her to appear to Luke when his father most needed her. Mom would know the right time, if she could choose. Joint Chief of State Neothel's Suite. Neothel consulted the fleet status repeater display on her office wall, known as the tote board within the service, and noted that the Anakin Solo had returned from Fondor.
"He's always been a day-tripper,"
she said to her droid administrator, recalling Jason's unexplained absences in previous months.
"If I didn't know he was wasting munitions on pointless exercises, I'd say he had a secret lover."
"There was minor enemy contact off Fondor."
"How off?"
"In Fondorian space."
"I hate it when he throws stones and goads them. I'll assume he's testing their resolve before the big push."
"I believe he was training his new assistant."
"Is that girl even enlisted? I won't have civilians playing battleships. Not in my navy. At least the Skywalker boy had a proper commission."
"She remains a civilian, Admiral."
"We'll see about that."
She tapped a note to Jason and submitted it to the system. He'd see it come up on his data pad next time he deigned to check it.
"There have to be some limits to this unstructured style of leadership."
Putting on a display of niggling annoyance was superfluous with a droid, but Neothel had to remain in character so that she never slipped. If she looked as if she'd gone off the boil, Jason would turn his attention to her. She knew enough about him to realize her mood was transparent to his Force senses, and so she kept it set at a steady temperature of irritated contempt and disdain. It really didn't take much effort. It came naturally. Neothel could still manage to keep tabs on most of Jason's movements by logging his ship's movements or the times his Stealth X was missing from the hangar, an incomplete method, but more than she expected to be able to do at this stage of his megalomania. And whether he liked it or not, procedure said there had to be someone contactable to make decisions as need arose, and that meant that he either had to hand over the reins to her completely or tell her where he was going if he wanted to be consulted. The Anakin Solo wasn't hard to track anyway. Even Jason couldn't make a Star Destroyer disappear, and he didn't seem to be able to secure the ship against intruders, so either he was less omnipotent than most supposed, or he used the ship like an insect trap. If she pressed him, she had a feeling he would say the latter. Not knowing how powerful he actually was, that troubled her. No military strategist could be comfortable while the enemy's strength and assets remained undefined. Neothel stared in slight defocus at the image of Mon Calamari on her office wall, losing herself for a moment in the unbroken horizon behind Reef Home, her home, and wondering when she might find time for shore leave again.
"I wanted the top job, and I got it. Serves me right."
"Colonel Solo to see you, Admiral," said the droid, using their military titles. Neither needed to be reminded they shared control of the Galactic Alliance. But Neothel needed to hear the word Admiral to be made to remember how she'd first signed up to serve the state. It was too easy to slide into the other role. Jason strode in and perched his behind on the edge of a table facing her desk. He was close to knocking off a pile of flimsy and data pads with his long black cloak, and that casualness annoyed her almost as much as the fact that his business-like black GAG fatigues had given way to this pointlessly dramatic wardrobe.
"I'm hearing interested noises from some of the Moffs about joining the GA," he said, They're thinking thoughts of empire again.
Heard personally?
She asked. Jason had said he wouldn't negotiate without her explicit involvement.
Or does this emanate from their gentlemen's clubs and smoke-filled tap-taps again?
Let's say the latter.
How? I'm fed up guessing like this is some party entertainment.
The military attaché was passing through Munalinst at the same time as a moth who has relatives there.
Doing charity work for bank employees, no doubt.
If I'd sent him to talk to the moths in Ravelin itself, you'd have accused me of bypassing you.
I would.
Neothel worried about the moths. The Imperial Remnant had been quiet and content to live within its borders for years. Or so she'd thought. Content was a relative term.
What impression have you given them?
Jason slid off the edge of the table and activated Neothel's holochart, the one she used when she had staff meetings. He zoomed in on the northeast quadrant, filling the table with translucent planets, stars, and threads of colored light representing the major hyperspace routes.
"Here's what we've hinted is on the table,"
he said, thrusting his fingertip into a cluster of worlds to the Nazoth side of the core.
"Borlias and Bilbringi."
"You're reassuringly transparent."
"Come on. Bilbringi is always going to be a system that they want back. We've not consolidated our claim on it since the Yuuzhan Vong War. All we did was defend it. Let's just say that now we're not going to be defending it. The mineral resources are still there, and, as they say in real estate, it's ripe for sympathetic restoration. As shipyards again.
Neothel thought that it was all a little too close to Coruscant for her comfort.
And Borlias gives them fast access to all the major hyperspace routes.
Resources, infrastructure, with a little bit of work, of course, and mobility. What more could a red-blooded moth want?
Blue-blooded. They're such snobs. I'm just concerned that they're all dressed up with nowhere to conquer, and we're giving them delusions of glory again.
They're still not big enough to worry us. The deal is that if they commit their considerable military machine to the war effort, then their reward will be a major expansion of their territory.
Jason tilted his head this way and that to consider the three-dimensional view of the galaxy's flattened disk.
So I suggest we ask them to help us take Fondor.
Jason, you just can't leave Fondor alone, can you?
It was clear that politically Fondor irked him. It wouldn't toe the line. It was Corellia all over again. And whether he admitted the irony or not, Jason's own Corellian blood made him a man who didn't like the word no. Strategically, though, he had a point. Fondor fed ships and weapons into the Confederate war effort at a prodigious rate, so shutting down the orbital yards made sense. Taking the planet and appropriating its industrial capacity, though, that would take more resources, and an army of occupation to keep the workforce running the yards and not sabotaging them. Neothel had her doubts about that, and for several reasons.
"You realize," she said, "that the Remnant might think Fondor is up for grabs too, seeing as Borlias and Bilbringi would extend their range to within striking distance of that side of the core."
"They might well think that."
"Don't play games with them, Jason. They'd be awfully close neighbors to Coruscant."
and with enough corridor to defend between Bastion and Borlias, to keep them too busy to start getting ideas about us and Pelion. Never forget Pelion. He knows how to keep the Moffs in line, so when we have his blessing, we can move.
If, said Neothel, if we get his blessing, he hates your guts.
So do you, Admiral.
Jason smiled.
But we still work well together. It's an efficient strategy. Two beings with no love lost between them, maneuvering.
This was the problem with Jason. If he had been demonstrably, consistently, visibly incompetent or insane, it would have been easy to dismiss him, and much easier to consider removing him the hard way. On sleepless nights, Neothel even found herself wondering how she could assassinate a Force user with prodigious powers and awareness of approaching danger. She always chose bombarding them from orbit with a planet killer, hypothetically, at least. Usually she thought about mutiny, and whether she might be on the receiving end of it if she didn't make up her mind. She had never had those thoughts in her life before. But then Jason would confuse her and negate all those justified fantasies by being strategic, sensible, and successful. She needed him to do something barking mad to steer her one way or the other, and the murder of Lieutenant Tebbutt was pretty close to the final get-rid-of-Jason token she needed to collect to salve her conscience.
As if I could take him down alone. I agree that we should take Fondor out of the game sooner rather than later.
Is that a yes to formally approaching the Imperial Remnant?
It'll make us look as if we can't handle the job on our own, but yes, we're at overstretch. I can't complain, having nagged you about that so often.
Excellent,
Jason said. He seemed as pleased as a child, being told he could hold a party and invite friends.
I'll send Tahiri Vela to see Pelion.
Haven't we got a more seasoned officer free to do the job?
She can be very persuasive. Much tougher than she looks, too.
Very well. But next time you want her to play with cannons, make sure she's a member of the Defense Force. Give her a commission. Enlist her, if you don't think she's officer material. But make sure she understands wars are not for civilians.
Jason's guard seemed as down as it would ever be. They'd argued after a fashion, admitted they disliked each other, and yet reached an agreement. All mistrust seemed to have been aired. Neothel slid in her knife.
What kind of Jedi are you, Jason?
She asked.
Because my meetings with the Jedi Council were never quite so target-oriented and ruthless.
I don't do things their way. It's true.
Are you a Sith?
Jason's loss of composure was always betrayed by his eyes. He could control the rest of his face and his body language. Neothel knew human psychology almost as well as Mon Cal's now, but there was always something in his eyes when he was caught out. She couldn't even pin it down beyond a slight flicker, but whatever it was, she saw it now.
What do you know about Sith?
He asked, all quiet reason.
Oh, not much. I know Palpatine was a Sith. And he was a brilliant tactician. No quarter given, all exits sealed. The kind of total war that I could never see Master Skywalker waging in an eternity. Which is why I ask. Because your ability to see the whole picture reminds me of that.
The first sentence was true. The second was a lie, of course.
Yes, Jason said quietly. I'm a Sith.
We should teach Sith tactics at the Academy, then, said Neothel,
knowing that she would probably rather have the Yuuzhan Vong back instead. Jason gave her that patronizing smile that said he didn't think she understood what was happening and pitied her for being so inadequate. That was fine. She was pleased with her progress, and hoped he detected that and misinterpreted it as basking in his temporary approval.
I'll brief Tahiri, he said, and left.
Neothel suspected that Tahiri was already on her way, but it didn't matter. She sat looking at the holochart and wondering how an Imperial Moff might see it, what temptations it might suggest. Had Pelion not still been running Bastion, the Remnant might have already been in the war, or at least circling the battlefield looking to take advantage of the chaos. But he was in his 90s, and wouldn't live forever, so perhaps managing their ambitions now would prevent them boiling out of the Braxent sector in a few years' time like kids let out of school bent on mischief.
I hate it when you might be right, Jason.
Admiral, said the droid, Captain Shevu asks if you can spare him 5 minutes.
Yes. Show him in.
Neothel shut down the holochart and had the feeling she might need to erase a little of the droid's memory.
If anyone calls, tell them I'm in a procurement planning meeting.
Shevu wasn't the kind of officer who popped in for a chat. Neothel had almost expected him since Luke Skywalker had identified him to her as a potential ally, and he hadn't wasted any time. Considering he was the most senior officer in Jason's personal elite, 967 Commando of the Galactic Alliance Guard, he was taking a huge risk, and Jason couldn't have made a worse-placed enemy. She gestured to him to take a seat and wondered who would say it first.
It's all right, she said. I sweep the office for surveillance devices every time I enter it.
Shevu slid a small scanner out of his pocket and aimed it at various points around her office before looking a little more relaxed.
So do I.
So we understand each other.
I think so.
What can I do for you?
I need to carry out forensics tests on your colleague's Stealth X.
He didn't say Jason. This was a man used to giving others very little to use against him.
Is there any way I can get access to it, uninterrupted, for a few hours?
He's gone to brief his new minion for a mission to Bastion.
Neothel ran through all the routine procedures a Stealth X would undergo, and why. Jason's was one of the few that the Jedi pilots hadn't taken when they withdrew.
How urgent is this?
We should have done it 3 months ago, Shevu said.
He mouthed Mara at her.
Might turn up nothing, of course.
So it wasn't just Ben who thought Jason had been involved in Mara's death then. Even though Luke had told Neothel, the idea seemed far more shocking coming from an objective outsider, a professional investigator like Shevu.
If you do it, Neothel said, won't he sense that you've been in the vessel?
That's why I'm getting a droid to do it.
A GAG unit?
No. A CSF one. Leave me to worry about scamming the identichips.
Very well, Captain. I'll arrange for the ground crew droids and personnel to be told it needs a special examination. Checking for canopy seal integrity. Fuel leaks into the cockpit. Whatever I can think of. In fact, let's do all the space-capable vessels the GAG has, too, to make it look convincing. You don't have that many.
Thank you, Admiral.
And we'd better come up with a good cover story, in case anyone compliments the guard on their extra attention to safety standards, and it reaches His Celestial Highness's ears.
A few months ago, Shevu said, I'd have expected him to know all about it right away. He was hands-on with his troops. But he's taken his eye off the little people now, and just focuses on the big players. We'll use that.
You know how dangerous it is to go after him, don't you?
Neathel said, slightly ashamed that she wasn't leading this quiet revolution against Jason.
Not half as dangerous as it'll be if I don't, said Shevu.
Oyubat Tapcalf, Keldabe.
What can I possibly teach you, Jedi?
Fett asked. At any other time, Jaina Solo's plea would have been amusing. No, satisfying. There was no humor to be had from this. A voice inside Fett still said that he should personally make that Barv Jason pay for what he had done to Aelin. But he'd made up his mind, when he saw his daughter's body, that his revenge would need to be more substantial, more complete, the kind he should have planned when his father was killed in front of him. Jedi had robbed him of what little family he had, and now they expected him to help them clean up their own mess.
"You've killed and captured more Jedi than anyone," Jaina said, looking like the words were choking her.
"Oh, I don't know. Some of my brothers racked up a pretty good score back in the day."
She didn't react.
"Jason and I are matched in terms of force strengths, but he's picked up training in force techniques I don't even understand. So my best chance of taking him is to use skills he doesn't have. And I'm pretty sure you never gave him the top 10 Mandalorian tips on Jedi busting."
"Only if he paid me," said Fett. "But what do you care about Aelin?"
"It's not only your daughter he's killed."
Jaina was doing a good job of looking desperate, losing that steady gaze for just a moment. She was desperate. Fett could taste it.
"He might even have been involved in Mara Skywalker's death."
"Ah, so that's when you decide he needs stopping."
He was totally unsurprised by the idea, just taken aback that Jaina had come here. Families feuded. No shock there.
"When it's Jedi getting killed."
Bevine hauled himself onto a bar stool and put his helmet to one side while he thumbed through his datapad.
"He kills his underlings, too, Mandalore."
He held out the pad so that Fett could see the message from one of his long list of informants. Coruscant wasn't half as far from Mandalore as it thought it was.
"Look, Ma, no hands. He's learning to break necks with the Force. Some lieutenant called Tebbut, and it's the talk of the fleet. Well, the people I know in the fleet, anyway. He's so adorable."
"Just like old times," Fett said. "Except I almost liked Vader."
Jaina's face fell slightly, as if she hadn't known about Jason's latest victim. She didn't accuse him of lying to wind her up, either, because they both knew what Jason had become. It was funny how victims mattered more when they had names. Fett resisted the urge to remind her that beings in all the places that Jason had attacked had names, too.
"You sent the Crushgaunts," said Jaina. "So we took that as a big hint."
"Try 10 tons of high-spec thermal detonator."
"We want him alive."
"Alive's always more complicated. Only do alive if they pay extra, Jedi."
Fett laid his blaster on the counter and removed his helmet two-handed. He was more comfortable revealing his face now.
Up to a few months earlier, he wouldn't even have let his own men see him without the helmet, except Bevin. But he'd seen the look on Han Solo's face when the man had looked into his eyes close up for the first time. He could read Solo's reaction, that the cold, implacable, toughened Durasteel helmet didn't conceal a heart of gold, just more Durasteel, more cold, and less heart. If they wanted to see a happy and well-adjusted Mandalorian under the armor, then they could go admire Bevin. Fett watched Jaina's eyes take him in.
"If I don't do it," she said, "I don't think anyone else can."
Bevin was used to playing a double act with Fett at times like this. Nice Mondo, nasty Mondo. He slipped into the role without even needing a cue, while Fett just stared into Jaina's face, testing her nerve.
"You've got a lightsaber, lady, and Jason Solo doesn't have Beskar Gam," Bevin said. "What can we possibly teach you? Ambush? Blaster Masterclass?"
He drew his ancient Beskod, the traditional Mandalorian iron saber, halfway out of its hilt.
"My handy vong-splitting technique?"
Jaina's eyes never left Fett's.
"Beskar is your special iron, yes? The metal the Krushgaunts were made from."
"Available at all good arms dealerships now," Bevin said cheerfully. "We've got a lovely new supply." "Is this all you really want? Just a few tips on whacking the bathrobe brigade?"
"Fett," Jaina said, undistracted, "you can teach me to bring down Jedi. You've done it often enough."
Fett counted two beats.
"And end the war? Just when our economy's getting back on its feet?"
"You'd sacrifice whole worlds for your own ends?"
"You sacrificed Mandalore to the Vong for your own ends."
"I'm sorry we didn't give you the reconstruction aid we should have, Fett. I'm not proud of that. But can't you see what Jason's going to do if he carries on? I need to stop him before he consolidates his power."
She wouldn't back down. He gave her that much. If Sintas hadn't been back from the dead, with all the unfolding misery that went with it, Fett might have found training Jaina Solo as near to enjoyable, as near to sweet revenge, as he'd come in decades.
"Do it. Jason Solo needs removing, because there'll still be plenty of business in his wake. And there's no irony finer than the Jedi elite fighting their own. Twin-on-twin combat, just like the Vong boys always wanted. Shame most of 'em are too dead to enjoy it."
But if he really listened to the unquiet voice in his mind and didn't slap it into silence, he heard what it was whispering. That the more the war spread, the more likely it was that Shalk and Breela might see their father killed in action. No kid deserved to go through what Fett had.
"Mondo Ade fight. Always have. What's wrong with you?"
What was wrong was that they were Bevin's grandchildren, and Bevin and Medrit had adopted the kid's mother, Dinua, when her own mother was killed fighting the Vongese with Fett. They'd all had enough of bereavement. Fett's whole life was tangled in orphans and unlived lives and moral debts. He looked Jaina up and down. She was small, and her smooth hands said that she'd never had to build an entrenchment with them. But she was a Jedi. He could treble her weight and reach based on that alone. And she was going after her brother, whether Fett trained her or not. He could see it in her eyes. A little fear, maybe not of him, and shame that she'd even had to ask the favor.
It clearly stuck in her throat to beg her father's old enemy for anything. But she was going to tough it out to get a necessary job done.
Fett respected that.
It was the first lesson any bounty hunter needed to learn, to forget the emotional baggage and focus solely on an objective.
If I'd been around for Aelin, I'd have trained her to fight, to look out for herself, maybe to hunt Jedi, too. Every Mondo trains their kids, even other folks' kids. They say you're not a man unless you do.
Shisa's dying voice was back in his head a lot lately, after being silent for so long.
If you only look after your own hide, then you're not a man.
It joined the chorus that nagged him most days, all advising him on what he ought to do. All his dead were coming back to haunt him in one form or another.
Okay, I'll do it, said Fett. And it's going to cost.
I wasn't asking for charity.
Jaina raised a withering eyebrow. She was Leia's girl, all right, but her shoulders relaxed a fraction. She took a very large denomination credit chip from her flight suit's breast pocket and held it between neatly manicured fingertips.
Not even vengeance gets in the way of business, does it, Fett?
That's your first lesson, Jedi. I'll bill you for it later.
Fett didn't need the credits, but he had his self-respect to consider, and she needed to hang on to hers. It was going to get pretty battered.
But let's avoid the tax bill. What else can you do to earn your keep?
I'm a fighter pilot, but I'm pretty handy with mechanical stuff, too.
We're all pilots here,
Fett said.
But we can always use mechanics. Lots of exiles coming back. Infrastructure creaking under the load. You'll be useful.
Fett put on his helmet and turned to go. Jaina called after him.
When do we start?
We already have. I'll be back tomorrow. Take a room here and get a good night's sleep.
She didn't look like she had anywhere else to go, and Fett wouldn't ask Bevine to find room for yet another stray. Baltan Kerid, whose vine tattoo seemed to have sprouted a couple of extra leaves, called to the barkeep,
"Better kick the Strill out of the executive suite, Chamika. You've got royalty."
Fett paused outside the Oyubat to take stock, then paced across the square to the sheer drop that stared down into the Kalita River. Bevine kept his counsel and waited with him, both of them leaning on the balustrade, watching the current as it tossed small, freshly broken branches onto the rocks. There was a lot of construction going on upstream.
"Jedi can be healers," Bevine said. "Now that's something none of us can do."
Fett braced his hands on the top rail.
"I don't want her fixing Syntas. Let's keep the problems from interbreeding."
"Just a thought."
"Thanks anyway.
But if you need the Jedi kept in line, there's always room at the farm."
Bevine would make a far better Mandalore than Fett ever had. He was more in Shisa's mold, as ready to boost morale and build alliances as he was to put his Beskad through the nearest enemy. And everyone liked him. All Fett had was his record on the battlefield and his dynastic name. He was an image that Mondo Adde liked to present to the world, not someone they actually needed, more a living talisman than a leader. Every Mandalore had his own style. In the end, it didn't seem to change the essence of Mandalore one bit.
"I told Myrta I killed Shisa,"
Fett said. Bevin sighed.
Might as well have all your OSIC hit the fan at the same time and get it over with, Bobica.
I didn't explain. Just told her.
You ever going to tell me?
Okay. I put Shisa out of his misery. We were surrounded. He was too badly hurt to escape, and I couldn't leave him to the Sevets.
Tough decision. But we guessed that.
He asked me to do it.
So you got the top job. Nobody ever argued about it anyway.
You can't blow a man's brains out without taking his last wish seriously. He made me give my word.
It was non-negotiable. Jango Fett had taught his son from the cradle that his word was everything.
He made me swear I'd be his successor. He always wanted me to be Mandalore. If I didn't know better, I'd have said he arranged it.
No witnesses.
You think I wanted this job?
Says a lot about you.
I said I never wanted to be Mandalore.
Bevin sounded a little testy.
I meant, Bobica, that you could have sworn anything to Shisa, and nobody would ever have known if you broke your word or not.
Fett gripped the edge of the stone balustrade.
I'd know.
Bevin just nodded.
You'd never abandon anything without a good reason.
No. For once, Bevin was wrong. And if Sintas got her mind back, she'd tell him so.